requires an hour of time.
So I'd just like to clarify, there's no quantum in there, and in fact I will be talking specifically about classical computers, and quantum computers are most definitely excluded from math analysis. So I put a quote up there from Boltzmann in his 1895 book, where he actually introduces a particularly bold conjecture. And he's obviously dealing with the reversibility objection, where you've got this kind of big fluctuation. And he's saying that actually, if you've got this, now this is a very bad diagram because this bit's supposed to be low entropy, and that's why I put it high. But he's saying if you have this big, huge fluctuation, people in this region are going to actually be perceiving in this direction, and people in this region are going to be perceiving in this direction, so that these don't exist, these people who are looking in the opposite direction. And the principal thing I'll say about this is he just simply introduces this. He just says this will happen. And there's an intuitive sense that we might like to feel it, but he doesn't really give any account of why this is. Now, he uses an analogy that in space there's no up and down, but we just perceive the Earth's surface to be down. But that's because of gravity, and we can actually know what's going on in the brain that actually is responsible for that, and can even do funny experiments where you can get fish to swim upside down by messing around with their brain. There's no real sense in which we actually know how we could do a funny experiment with someone's brain to get them to be able to remember the future. So it's not obvious immediately how that's actually supposed to work, if there really is any kind of analogy there at all. Now, I'm not going to be directly arguing against Boltzmann's intuition. I think broadly it seems like it ought to be right. What I'm actually going to be discussing is a particular suggestion as to how there's some property of the brain that is actually responsible for this. And it's going to be about the brain being a computer. Now, this particular suggestion, I've actually heard a number of people make it informally, but actually when I kind of, and then I've talked it to people, and I've got, interestingly, various extreme reactions. Either it's obviously wrong, or it's obviously right. And nothing in between. And I found it very hard to actually find anyone who has written it down, but then I found that Hawking actually makes it the claim in a popular science article in 87 that a computer records an item in memory, the total amount of disorder in the universe increases, the direction of time in which a computer remembers the past is the same as that in which disorder increases, and he explicitly claims that if you were to try and put yourself in an entropy decreasing world, then the computer would remember things in the opposite direction. However, this wasn't his central point. He repeats this again in 94 in actually a proceedings. And he puts a bit more details. Now, to be fair, neither of these papers are really actually about this. These are about the arrow of time, but it's in the cosmological setting he's generally talking about, and he's really mentioning this in passing. Shulman, in 2005, dedicates an entire paper to this proposition called A Computer's Arrow of Time. And he's making this explicit proposition that Shulman explicitly bases it on Landau's principle, which is well known in the thermodynamics of computation. So, there's definitely been claims in the literature to the effect that the psychological arrow depends upon the thermodynamic arrow via properties of the mind being a computer. This requires two things. The mind is a computer. And certain computational processes are only possible in an entropy increasing direction. This is the claim. Now, I am actually going to argue against this, but I'm only going to be arguing against the second of those two statements. I'm going to say nothing about the first statement. I'm going to express no opinion about it whatsoever. What I am going to claim is that any computational process that can take place in an entropy decreasing universe can take place, in an entropy increasing universe can take place in an entropy decreasing universe. That computers are not going to be able to provide this link from the thermodynamic to the psychological arrow of time. So the questions, and hopefully answers, that I will actually be raising in this talk are, what do I mean by an entropy increasing, decreasing universe, just for the sake of clarity? What kind of computational process am I talking about, which is actually going to turn out to be whatever you like, as long as it's classical, not quantum? What's the physical process? That is actually, how do you actually physically embody these computational processes, which will be able to be based on quantum processes? What about Landau's principle, which is supposed to be the fundamental thermodynamics of computation, so that ought to say something about it? And if it's not a computer, maybe what else might be responsible for this, you know, very clear alignment we certainly do observe in the world we are in. So first of all, I just want to actually sort of clarify what I mean about entropy increasing universe and entropy decreasing universe. I try very hard in this thing to actually ever avoid using a phrase such as the entropy of the universe, because that's a tricky concept. So I'm just going to talk about an entropy increasing universe. There's a number of different things that can be associated with this phrase. An asymmetry in physical processes that has a tendency for heat to be converted into work in some way that doesn't happen back. There's an initial condition hypothesis. The universe starts in some small a priori unlikely part of the state space. There's no equivalent future condition hypothesis unless it's on such a future timescale that it actually doesn't have any impact. There's also a present-day statistical condition about interacting systems, and this is in the more in the kind of the local Gibbs framework that one uses, where one has no initial microscopic correlations between systems. Thermal states are initially well described by the canonical distribution, and no equivalent conditions on final states. Now, the question of actually how well these three different types of ways of characterizing an entropy-increasing universe go together is actually an important question in the foundations of statistical mechanics. I'm just going to assume, for the sake of this talk, that this is going to be a reasonable way of characterizing what it means to be in an entropy-increasing universe. Okay, so that enables us to see very clearly what does it mean to be in an entropy-decreasing universe is you just flip the relevant terms around. A tendency for heat to convert to work. Final condition hypothesis that the universe will end up in a small, a priori unlikely part of the state space. No equivalent initial condition hypothesis, unless it was very, very far in the past so that it makes no difference. And kind of interesting, actually, in the kind of the local statistical conditions, no final microscopic correlations between systems. They might be when two systems first interact, but what happens is, like, spontaneously microscopic correlations appear and get used up, and resulting in thermal systems being at the end of any interaction, well described by the canonical distribution. No equivalent condition on initial statistical states. And one thing I want to say about an entropy decreasing universe, this does not necessarily mean it's just taking the world we're in and reversing it. That isn't going to do the job, because taking the world we're in and reversing it is going to necessarily reverse every single arrow that exists in our world. And we're actually questioning whether two arrows are aligned. Well, they are aligned in our world, and if we absolutely just reverse our world, we've necessarily reversed both of them. And we've got to actually look at it in a way that's not going to presuppose that. So just to sort of say, what's the question we're then asking? Here we've got an entropy increasing universe, and this is the entropy of the universe increasing over time. Got it the right way up this time. And this is us perceiving it increase. This is an entropy decreasing universe that is just got from absolutely reversing our universe. Now, the thing is, we're in that universe, so us have been reversed, and we're perceiving it the other way around. That's clearly not going to be the answer. That's not good enough. There's us in our particular perception. The question is there another entropy decreasing universe in which there exist beings that are perceiving processes but are actually perceiving in the other way? And these are these kind of blue universes. Obviously, we can reverse that again. In this case, the blue universes would be the ones that actually are remembering the high entropy, what to us would be a future. The other possibilities are, of course, a green universe in which there are somehow beings that can both remember past and future, and other universes in which it's just not possible for causal agents to have memories or exist at all. That's the set of all possibilities. And now we can ignore the green and black ones. And what we could just say, just imposing the condition of being in an entropy increasing universe, what's the relative likelihood of it being a blue universe or a red universe? That's the way we need to think about the question, just from that condition. And so the next thing is computers. Logical operations are essential for computers. So here's two very well-known ones. And in fact, put them together and you can build a universal Turing machine. Now, these have a slight difference. This one actually merges the computational paths, and this one just swaps the logical states. So this one's what gets characterized as being logically irreversible. This one gets characterized as being logically reversible. Technically, actually, it could have just been called invertible in this case, and non-invertible. But now you can build all of these kind of logical operations from swapping two logical states, merging two logical states, or doing nothing to your logical states. If you look at what that looks like in the opposite time direction, well, you see swapping logical states is swapping logical states. The merging logical states is some kind of branching. And doing nothing is still doing nothing. So certainly if we just took those as our operations and we reversed them, we wouldn't get the same set of operations. So there certainly, at first glance, looks like there's a case for thinking that there is an asymmetry to computation. The one thing that might be said is, well, there's actually reversible logic operations. So here's a CC NOT gate, which is one of these reversible operations. It has the property if you feed a 1 for definite into C, into this third gate, the resulting actually means is the output F here is a NAND of the A and B. And we know that NAND is a universal, so you can actually build a universal Turing machine entirely from these reversible operations only. This has a slight extra twist to it that you end up needing more inputs and outputs. So you create a history here of your computation. And Bennett showed there was a nice way of cleaning this up by having a blank bit which is left. And then after you've done your computation, you clone the output into the blank and then do the reverse of the computation, thus giving you your input and output. Hands up anyone that can spot what goes wrong for a quantum computer. No? strangely enough, this doesn't get pointed out enough. So that we've just stated, that just building things out of doing nothing and switching logical states can be used to efficiently simulate things involving these merging of paths. Interesting twist is that it's not clear that they can efficiently simulate the branching, because there's a class of computational procedures, the BPP complexity class, that appears to be able to do certain algorithms exponentially better than any combination of feet. So somehow by adding this kind of branching rule as a random number generator, it seems that there's some odd asymmetry there. And this leads to a generalization of probabilistic Turing machines. But the essential point is that the computational logic is you have these basic primitive things. You can build anything, universal Turing machines, probabilistic Turing machines, out of these. And what's more, we have very easy physical processes that can implement all of these. What am I going to take a computer to be? I'm going to take any subset of these that can build the set of operations you think are the necessary operations to be a computer, and I will show that that subset of operations can operate in an entropy increasing and an entropy decreasing world just as well. So pick whatever you like. Okay. And the way to do it is we're going to have to actually consider the reversing of a computation. Now, this is not logical reversibility in the sense of the computation being an invertible map. It's rather a reversal of the transformation of information. So this is taking into account the probability distribution over the input states, the Shannon information. This helps us to actually include these indeterministic random number generating operations, because then you can define them by conditional probabilities of an output given an input. Now, if you don't have the random number generators, these are all either 0 or 1. But if you have the random number generators, you can get non-trivial values for this. The reverse transformation of an operation then is just simply defined by this very well-known rule, where we've got our initial transformation, PB given A, and we define a reverse transformation, PA given B. It's not hard to see that if the input to L occurs with some probability A, then following the logical reverse L star restores the original probability distribution. It doesn't restore the original logical state, but it does restore the original set of logical states and the probability distribution over them. And it's a self. The reversal of a reversal is restores the original operation. And also, if you follow the reversal with the original operation, you will restore the PB. And as this is a PAB, then it turns out this can actually be built out of those same primitive operations. So we can build any of these reversals. And in fact, this is what those primitive operations look like. The swapping becomes a swapping. The merging becomes a branching. The branching becomes a merging. And the complete randomization remains a complete randomization. So again, if you take some subset of the L, and then you do the reversal, you don't get your original set. So still this possibility just doing a reversal of there being some asymmetry here. What's important, however, is that if I can build all the L, then I can definitely build all the L star. So what does it take to physically build one of these? A particular physical implementation is going to be an evolution of the microstates such that this condition, these probabilities, is met. So I need to have a Hamiltonian on the system and the environment. Each input logical state is going to correspond to a region of the system state space, a macrostate with many microstates. So each logical state, A, is going to correspond to a macrostate, a separate, distinct macrostate. That's why this is a classical computation. The proportion of all the microstates in A is this probability A. So the macro operation is just this HL, this Hamiltonian flow. As it's a Hamiltonian flow on the state space, it's not a different Hamiltonian flow for different microstates, because that's not a Hamiltonian flow. It has to be defined over the whole state space with a single flow for all microstates. Finally, the output state is also a set of macroscopically distinct states, each one corresponding to one of the logical states. And for it to actually be an implementation of the computation, we need to have the proportions of the microstates starting out in A and in B given by this probability. And that then just gives us, again, probability of B straightforwardly. And we can also calculate the reverse. The proportion of those microstates that end in B, that started in A, is probability of A given B by normal statistical rules. If we take the time reverse of that, now this time we are actually doing an actual genuine time reversal. We time reverse the Hamiltonian, and we reverse the states either by reversing velocities or complex conjugating the wave functions. And that's on the final microstate. So each B corresponds to a region of the state space. The proportion of the microstates in B is PB. Sequence of operations take place defined by this reverse Hamiltonian. The proportion of the microstates starting out in B, then end in A, is probability of A given B, which means that this time reversal, if we've got this exact time reversal of the world, in the time reverse world, what we've seen looks like an implementation of L star. So now we're going to get to the first key result. If we consider a sequence of logical operations, so what we have is just one logical operation acting on a probability distribution over a set of logical states. And then we have this sequence of them. And this is going to embody some computation. Whatever you want, pick your L's, pick your sequence of them, pick your logical states, whatever you like. We have a sequence of these operations. Now, if we take the time reverse of that, then we're in an entropy decreasing universe. But it's L star operations. And we've seen the L star operations aren't necessarily the L operations. The sequence of them isn't the same sequence. So this doesn't look really anything like, there's no reason to suppose this is actually going to look like this. It doesn't look like a computation, necessarily. But what we're going to do is not going to do that. What we're actually going to do is we're going to look at that sequence of L star, and because we know we can build the L star just as easily as we can build the L, we're actually going to build the sequence of L star operations in our universe. Now, if we look at that, that's in an entropy increasing universe. If we look at that from the opposite time direction, then we get our original sequence of operations. But it's in an entropy decreasing universe. So given any sequence of the logical operations that you consider to be the sequence of computational processes that are going to be responsible for your psychological arrow of time, well, it can happen, that sequence of processes can happen in an entropy decreasing universe. Okay, what about Landau's principle? This is the basic principle of thermodynamics of information processing, and it's very often connected to the concept of thermodynamic irreversibility. There are claims that that really there are some logical operations that, particularly logically irreversible operations, that have to require thermodynamic irreversibility, that actually will only be entropy increasing. Now, I want to say right here now, these papers and these quotes come from papers that are more or less assuming that one is in an entropy increasing universe. So anything that I'm going to be saying about entropy decreasing universe obviously shouldn't be taken as being a criticism of the arguments of these papers. It can't be, because they're assuming it's in an entropy increasing universe. As it happens, I do actually think they're wrong. But that's a different argument. So if Tony's here, that's why. So I don't actually not arguing directly against these, and my following argument shouldn't be construed as a direct argument to them. It's about the fact that the derivation of Landau's principle assumes that you're in an entropy increasing universe. And how it goes, here's a derivation of Landau's principle. We start off with these local statistical conditions. The environment's in a canonical thermal state, there's a statistical separability, here are our logical states, and we have a Hamiltonian flow. And then this here is saying that the fact that the operation on the alpha state produces the beta state with the right conditional probabilities. And then what we work through is some very standard operations and calculations about the logarithmic function and canonical states and so forth. And what we end up is a statement that the amount of heat generated in the environmental heat bath is greater than or equal to the change in Shannon information over the course of the operation times KT log 2, or greater than or equal to, and the minus is there because if the Shannon information goes down, the heat has to be generated. And that's fine, no problems with that. What happens if you're in an entropy decreasing universe? Well, then you have to use a different set of conditions that we saw. So we have to actually have imposed the canonical state at the end and the statistical separability at the end. It's a little bit more of a, seems a bit of an odd calculation, but one can actually quite do it. We then have to actually look this way in order to get back to make sure that the operation is in fact an implementation of the right operation. Then more or less it follows through the same, except for certain terms have been switched around. And the final inequality has been reversed, which in a sense is what you should expect. You're doing it now in an entropy decreasing universe, so instead of having a minimum amount of heat generation, it's got a maximum amount of heat generation. So the conclusion of the previous slides really isn't in a contradiction to Landau's principle, because Landau's principle assumes one is in an entropy increasing universe, as commonly stated. If you try and work it out in a decreasing universe, you find out that the operations are entropy decreasing, because you're in an entropy decreasing universe. It's kind of obvious, really, in retrospect. As you can see, that's all the difference. So there's further, how am I doing for time? 5 minutes, okay. There is another claim that can be made, that it's not just about the operation itself, but it's about the correlation with the world. This requires you to say, well, look, the system is states, there's a set of states of the computer, but it's actually, we have to consider the states of the world as well as just the general environmental heat bath. So, the world is in one of a number of states, macroscopically distinct states. And in the process, the computer actually acquires information about it. And then one coarse grains over this environmental degrees of freedom. And some measure, by some appropriate measure preserved on the map, you get this inequality, and you can say, ah, well, look, if then this is actually, this coarse graining is the entropy increase. And what you've actually developed is some correlations, and coarse graining over those correlations is what's responsible for the entropy increase. The thing is, if this doesn't actually help, because if you start off with a system that just already knows what the state of the world is, and then decides, for some reason, to decorrelate itself with the world, then coarse grain, you get but it would also be entropy decreasing, entropy increasing. So this process of being not correlated to going to correlated and being correlated and going to not correlated isn't what's responsible for this kind of increase in entropy. In fact, entropy increase in terms of correlations is generally, well, you see what happens is it's a result of this kind of well-known inequality that you're doing a coarse graining, and it's generally justified because those microscopic correlations with the environment are not accessible. If you actually try and look at how correlations work between an information gathering system and the system it's gathered information about, then you will find that, well, you can derive a similar equality. But the decorrelation here is when you're saying, okay, here's the system having information about another system. And this, when it's become decorrelated, means that it no longer has information about the system. And the thing is, that's not information there. This system here doesn't actually know anything about this system. It's the accessibility of macroscopic correlations. It's the fact that when I look at the world and I know something about the world, and that correlation with the world persists and doesn't get destroyed and doesn't disappear, is what makes it useful information. I am able to do that. So it doesn't actually happen. If I look at the location of my can, it doesn't actually move over the course of this talk. It's actually just a different type of macroscopic correlations, and microscopic correlations are just different types. They're not, the macroscopic correlations involved in information gathering is just the wrong type for entropy increase. Our intuition is that this is kind of the process that happens, perhaps. We acquire information and then we end up in some sort of heat death of the universe. But the problem is, for the kind of already having information and then losing it, we can still have the same, tell exactly the same story. We still haven't got an explanation of why this kind of process is more prevalent than this kind of process on any kind of entropic grounds. Now, there are some other possibilities that have been suggested. So, for example, there's been recent arguments by Albert and Lohr and Kotek, I believe, originally, claiming that, and I need to spin through this quickly because I'm out of time, suggesting that, for example, the interposition of initial condition hypothesis is actually, in some way, constrains the counterfactual statements one can make about the world. And this is actually responsible for it. Or one could actually ask further about, is there some sort of evolutionary advantage to acquiring information in an entropy-increasing world rather than an entropy-decreasing world? Or you could just simply suppose that actually the psychological arrow is, in fact, independent of the thermodynamic arrow, and that it's just a contingent fact about our world that we remember a low-entropy past and don't remember a high-entropy past. One should make sure one doesn't simply rule that out by fiat. So the conclusion, contrary to common, if usually informally stated intuition, it's not information processing that is intrinsically aligned to a thermodynamic arrow of time. Any computational process that can be constructed in an entropy increasing universe, you can construct the logical reverse of it in an entropy decreasing universe, logical reverse of it, and that looks like the original process in an entropy decreasing universe. Landau's principle assumes one's in an entropy increasing universe, and if you look at it in an entropy decreasing universe, the essential inequality is reversed. An acquisition of information is the wrong kind of correlation. It's the inaccessibility of microcorrelations that is entropy increase. It's the accessibility of macrocorrelations that makes it useful information. So insofar as computation has an arrow, it isn't directly governed by the statistical mechanical arrow, so it fails to make the link at least Hawking and Shulman suggested it made. This doesn't, however, mean the cycle arrow is not a consequence of the thermodynamic arrow. But if it is, it's not by computational properties of the brain.
Dick Shout, Boundary Institute. If I understand you, what you've said, among other things, is that you can make a classical computation which has within it information losing elements, such as an AND gate. We can reverse that by including information producing elements, such as a random number generator, and we'll get a computation with the same probability distribution. I understand that even though when my paycheck is computed, I would rather it had the real value rather than the distribution of values. But I'm sure you know that there are ways to do reversible AND gates by producing an extra output, which in effect holds the information you just lost. So you can play the whole thing back and make a totally reversible exact computation, yes? So Landauer's principle holds information losing elements. That is to say, you must burn some energy to do so, to lose some information. Mm-hmm. Are we on the same wavelength?
I agree with everything you just said, so I'm not actually sure. Is there a question?
We agree.
I agree with everything. I did say earlier on in the talk that there are, that for example, the CC NOT gate is universal for universal Turing machines. And certainly that would be an example of the kind of reversible thing that you could do. In that case, of course, the delta H in the Landauer's principle simply becomes zero because the logically reversible operation doesn't change the Shannon information over the course of the operation. So in that case, both the inequalities in the entropy decreasing universe becomes delta Q is less than or equal to zero, and in the increasing universe, delta Q is greater than or equal to zero. So because there's still the possibility of course it being an inefficient physical process. But I think, I don't think the conclusion is affected. But
well, that was an admirably clear talk. But I have a question that I might have missed something, perhaps because of the speed with which you went. The question is, what exactly do you mean by accessibility of correlations? And is that a anthropocentric notion in the sense that it depends on us humans being rather gross and that it would be different from hypothetical neat-fingered beings such as Maxwell demons?
Right, good question. In terms of when I was trying to distinguish between the accessibility of macroscopic correlations and the inaccessibility of microscopic correlations, there's two things there. Is what do I mean by microscopic correlations being inaccessible? And there is, that I think is actually a bit of a tricky notion in the foundations of statistical mechanics, certainly, and I don't claim to have a good answer to that. The best answer I ever heard was when a microscopic correlations, when do you keep them? When they're relevant. It was, in fact, you. As far as the accessibility of macroscopic correlations, I simply take that as being a very pragmatically, we know that when we see that, because that's actually what we're actually doing when we look at the world and gather information. We have those, they're accessible to us. So there is something epistemic in both of those notions, I would
agree. Depends on us.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, well, let's thank Owen.